return. Thanks for joining us. Have a good day.
And now, it's your turn with Dave Mullarkey. 724-283-2525. It's Butler County's only live call-in talk show. It's your turn. Weekdays from 12:30 to 2 on 680 AM WISR and worldwide on the internet at WISR680.com. It's your turn. 724-283-2525. And now, it's your turn with Dave Mullarkey.
Welcome, welcome. Nice to have you with us, listeners, on a Tuesday, Halloween. Halloween, the last day of October. November rolls in tomorrow, and the holiday season is just around the corner, huh? And don't forget, we changed the clocks this weekend. Don't let that slip up on you. Yeah, first Sunday in November, we change the clocks. We go back to standard time. That'll give us a more reasonable sunrise. It was almost 8 o'clock this morning before the sun came up. And, of course, we lose an hour at the other end of the day, too. It's going to be very close to 5 o'clock in the evening for sundown when we change the clocks. But we've come through this before, so no trouble. Right now it's 41 degrees. We don't look for it to warm up a great deal more today, kind of a raw day. Folks, we knew this was coming. We were living on borrowed time with that gorgeous weather during the first 3 weeks of October. It was only last week when things started to go south, and then last weekend they really went south, didn't they? We have more candidate chats lined up for you today. We will not have open talk time, but we will once again be listening to candidates who are seeking either a seat on Butler City Council or seeking to be mayor in the city of Butler. We started these chats yesterday. We talked yesterday with Tom Donaldson. We talked yesterday with Kathy Klein. And on the agenda today, in fact, it will be our first to chat, Jeff Smith will be visiting with us. He's a candidate for city council. Later on today, we will talk with Jamie Lee Gehring. She is a candidate for mayor. And still later, in the first hour today, we'll talk with James Kempel, who is a candidate for Butler City Council. Now, that leaves two more candidates, and we'll talk to them tomorrow. Ben Smith tomorrow and Kenneth Bonus will be with us tomorrow. So that'll wrap up our candidate chats, chatting with the candidates who are seeking office here in the city of Butler for either mayor or city council. We also will chat later today with Laura Schroff. We're going to be talking about angels, not so much divine angels, maybe a little bit about that, I don't know, but certainly angels on earth. That's what Laura, and she's written about this. In fact, I think she started, must be 7 or 8 years ago, writing about angels and good deeds. And she tells some wonderful stories. They're not made up. They're true stories. So we'll be chatting with her a little bit later on the program today. It's pretty fascinating stuff. So that's the lineup for the program today. And as we mentioned, tomorrow we'll wrap up our candidate chats on the Wednesday edition of It's Your Turn, tomorrow, November the 1st. By the way, you know, they've already returned to standard time in some parts of the world. Yeah, it's different. It's really confusing. In all of Europe, for example, they are now back on standard time. And they call it winter time. At least in Ireland, they call it winter time. They went back on winter time this past weekend. Mm-hmm. We used to, didn't we? Right? It used to be October, the last Sunday in October. We would change the clocks, and then, I don't know, Congress has messed with this formula so many times in the last 20 or 25 years, it's hard to remember when we did what. But there was a time when we change the clocks, I'm sure, the last Sunday in October, and then the last Sunday in April. It was very late that we went to daylight saving time in the spring. Now, I'm all for daylight saving time. I love it. I could live with it all year round. I know that's a problem for, especially for families that have little kids, getting them off to school when it's still dark. So I understand that. But otherwise, I could live with it all year round. They have expanded it. We now have a great deal. We spend a great deal more of the year on daylight saving time than we do on standard time. Okay. So if you have friends in London, they are ordinarily 5 hours ahead of us, but not now. They're 4 hours ahead of us. Yeah, it's just past 4:30 in the afternoon in London. By next week, though, it'll be back to a five-hour difference. I want to talk to you about one of our sponsors on the program before we check in with Jeff Smith. It'll be our first candidate chat here today. It was, oh gosh, I don't know, maybe 3 years ago when we took advantage of Cummings Candy for gifts. And I don't know, I just never thought of it before or what. But with holiday time just around the corner now, consider that. Cummings Candy and Coffee, their shop on Main Street, downtown Butler, under the red and white awning. They offer corporate orders of custom gift boxes to give to clients. And you can choose from a wide assortment. Chocolate-covered potato chips. That's what we gave. Now, that might not sound like much. Believe me, that was the hit. That was the hit of the holiday season, the people that we gave those little boxes to. Also, chocolate-covered pretzels, graham crackers, cherry cordials, and why not add a half-pound bag of Butler's own proprietary blend of coffee. They call it the Main Street Roast. What else would they call it from Cummings, huh? Roasted right there. Right there at the Main Street location. Oh, boy, what an aroma that gives when they're roasting coffee. If you're interested in corporate orders of custom gift boxes for clients, call Barry Cummings. He can give you all the details. 287-3287. 287-3287. Cummings Candy and Coffee has been serving the Butler community since 1905. That is, what, 112 years? Is that right? Yeah, 112 years. Three locations now, of course, Main Street, under the red and white awning on North Main Street. By the way, they've been at that location for over 100 years, almost their entire history. But they also have locations now at Butler Memorial Hospital. There's a Cummings there. And the newest Cummings, Cummings West, on Route 68 Evans City Road, right on the outskirts of town. They're open 7 days a week. And one more treat for you, peanut brittle is available now. It's not available all year long. But it's available right now, and it is absolutely scrumptious. Absolutely scrumptious. Cummings, Candy and Coffee. Okay, candidate chats coming up for you here on WISR, and we'll be doing that on the first hour of the program today. We continue, listeners, here on WISR and on the It's Your Turn program with our candidate chats in advance of the upcoming November election. And this year we're focusing on candidates who are seeking to either serve on Butler City Council or to serve as mayor of the city of Butler. And on this segment, we're chatting with Jeff Smith, who is a candidate for Butler City Council. Welcome, Jeff Smith. Nice to have you with us.
Thanks, Dave. It's always great to be here and get a chance to talk to you.
Many people will know you, but there are some listening who perhaps will not. So maybe you want to take a few seconds and tell those folks who you are.
Sure. Well, I obviously live here in Butler, and I'm former treasurer for the city. So for about 4 years, people would have seen my name on the tax forms that they got each year. Mm-hmm. Hopefully they don't hold that against me. You know, and my wife and I, we just love Butler. You know, we bought one of the old Victorian houses. We fixed it up. And just this is where we want to spend the rest of our years because it's just a great place. So, you know, and I really was pretty much done with politics. And then in the spring when I watched the candidates talking and, you know, it just seemed like it was the same thing, that the focus was on having events, and not that that's a bad thing. I enjoy going to them. But what it seemed to me is most of the candidates running, especially the incumbents on council, didn't realize that, you know, what makes for a nice quality of life in the city isn't what pays the bills. It's not what keeps the police out there patrolling or pays for the fire department. And really to do that, you need to have strong neighborhoods. You need to have people who owner-occupied housing. You need people that are paying their earned income taxes. And then it all comes together. And so I decided that I'd do a write-in in the spring and was successful in that. And been trying to get out the message that the way we're going to save Butler City is by saving the neighborhoods.
So you think we should widen the focus then to include neighborhoods?
Right. Well, I think the neighborhoods should be the focus. Oh. The people in the Butler City, I mean, they are the city. And so we need to make it a safe environment for them. We need to protect them from, you know, some of these out-of-town slumlords that come in. And when you have somebody come in and buy up one of these old homes, carve it up into a bunch of apartments, it's like a cancer. It just spreads out from there, and pretty soon the whole block. I've been talking to people in different neighborhoods, and several of them have told me how they don't know what to do. You know, they're getting older. They'd like to sell their home, but then they just start pointing out, that house has turned into a rental, that one's a rental, and I'll never get my money for my house. I don't know what to do. And that's what I want to help change. I want to make Butler City the place that people want to live.
Do you think that this out-of-town landlord thing leads to a tendency toward more crime?
Well, I think what happens is, you know, because of the way that Butler County has set things up to where, you know, the bulk of their social services, the programs for the non-working people, and, you know, tends to attract people without any income. And then sometimes that does, you know, the people that don't have much to look forward to, those are the people that turn to the drugs. Those are the people that sometimes get involved in crime, drug-related crime. So, yeah, that can bring those in. And again, not all people that are participating in social services are bad people. Some people legitimately need help, and we need to do everything we can to help them. But there is that element, and I think, unfortunately, most people in Butler can point to a house or two houses on their block that falls into that situation.
So is it possible to control this or to improve that? How would you do it? Through, like, code enforcement or something?
Code enforcement, zoning changes. One thing that I've talked with some people about is, you know, maybe we need to start out by identifying some preservation districts where we put in stronger zoning ordinances to prevent people from carving up houses and converting them from single-family dwellings, owner-occupied single-family dwellings.
Hmm. And code enforcement? We do have code enforcement officers, don't we?
Well, we do. And in fact, one of the things, you know, as I've talked about this back in the summer, I pointed out to what they were doing over in Trenum, where the police officers, code enforcement, were going out and identifying some of these properties that were not being taken care of, turning the whole block into a blighted neighborhood. And I'd like to think that I've had an impact, just my campaign has had an impact, because I believe that city council is now talking about that. You know, what's disappointing is some of those people on council have been there 12 years, and just now they're getting started to do this sort of thing. But you know what? If that ends up being my contribution, then I'm glad I got in the race.
Do you see this as eventually helping to ease the city's financial position, which has been under stress for some time?
Oh, I mean, that is the motivation for improving the neighborhoods. Admittedly, it makes it nice for everybody, a nice place for everybody to live. But you know, one comparison that I've given to people is if you when somebody's looking for a new home, you know, maybe they want a place that's close to work. Maybe they are concerned with the school district. Maybe they, and then where can I find a good buy for a home? Well, if you compare Butler Township and Butler City, you know, you could live in either one because they're so close. It doesn't matter where you work. There's no benefit to living in the township or living in the city in terms of going to work. Mm-hmm. It's the same school district, so you're not going to pick the township over the city because of the schools. So really it comes down to the housing. If you look at what the per capita, you know, the average person contributes to Butler Township in terms of earned income tax, it's about $117 a person. If you look in the city at what the average person contributes, it's only $70. That's a $47 per person difference. If we had the same demographics in the city as we do in the township, and there's really not any reason why we shouldn't be close, that's about $600,000-$700,000 more revenue that this city could have. And, you know, that would be a huge, huge help.
Do you have any, or would you have any other priorities as a member of city council in addition to focusing on improving the neighborhoods?
Well, I think the one of the things that we really need to work on, you know, it's great to have the neighborhoods improved, and that's my goal, but you know, we have to have a reason why people want to live in the area. And, you know, several years ago, Butler City, Butler Township, and some of the other surrounding townships, there was a lot of money spent to come up with a comprehensive plan. And in that plan, you know, there were areas for business or areas for residential. But like a lot of studies that cities do, towns do, they did the study and then they put up on the shelf. I think once a year they send one of the people from the office to that group. What I would like to do is work with the surrounding community, Center Township, Butler Township, Summit, to work with them to try to bring business to the area. Because one of the misconceptions people have is, you know, we don't need businesses necessarily to be in the city. We need businesses in the surrounding area. And then we need those people that work in those businesses to live in the city. Because Butler City's got the finest housing stock anywhere in the county in terms of, you know, the old homes, the historic homes, and price-wise, you know, I've told my friends, why would you want to buy a house in Cranberry? You could probably buy a whole block up in Butler. So come to Butler. So that would be a big priority, is to work with the neighboring municipalities for economic development.
I spoke recently with Dr. Nicholas Neupower, president of Butler County Community College, and in their long-range master plan, they are committed to trying to develop some sort of a presence in the city of Butler. What it might be is still a little bit nebulous. He cited comparisons to some other cities. Altoona was one. Well, there's a Penn State branch campus that's developed a presence in the downtown. Would you be in favor of discussing this further with the community college officials?
Oh, I think it would be great. It would be really great. You know, the other thing community college has talked about is having some housing for its students. If they were to develop a campus, a small campus downtown, maybe they could have some of that housing downtown, which would just make the city way more vibrant. Again, having BC3 come downtown and establish a presence, you know, admittedly, they are a nonprofit, but, you know, they would be attracting people that would be spending money. You know, they would probably use the parking facilities. So there would still be a significant revenue coming from something like that. You know, interestingly enough, when the Butler School District was looking at its consolidation year or 2 years ago, and there was talk of closing the junior high. I'm a trustee up at Slippery Rock, and I raised that at one of our meetings about Slippery Rock, you know, that if they had shuttered the junior high, that Slippery Rock should take a look at having a campus in Butler, just the way they have their physical therapy up in Harrisville. So, and you know, there was some interest, but then the junior high stayed open, and that went away. There was no more discussion. But I would love to see BC3 come to town.
You think the city is poised to be able to take some advantage with the apparent near completion of the Center City project now?
Well, you know, that really got thrown for a loop with the announcement that the current owners have sold it. So, you know, that's certainly raised some questions as to, you know, what's going to happen. It was especially disconcerting that they didn't say who the new buyer was. You know, that just sort of raised some flags. But, you know, you have to be hopeful. You have to be optimistic that it turns out well, whatever direction it takes. You know, I, at the time it was being, when it was proposed and being built, at that time I was a big proponent of a flat parking lot because I really didn't want to see the city take on $100,000 a year in additional costs for that parking garage. If with the sale to the new owner, if that requirement is not still there, requiring the city or requiring the hotel to pay the city for all of those parking spaces every day, that's going to be a big hurdle for the city to overcome. But hopefully that is part of the agreement.
Mm-hmm. We're talking with Jeff Smith. He is a candidate for Butler City Council in the upcoming election, November election. An issue that came up in the recent political forum, the televised debate, was the possibility of examining the use of a city manager. Would you be in favor of this, discussing this, looking at it, or not so much?
Well, when I was a treasurer, we had conversations about, you know, it would be great to have a manager, city manager. The reality is, you know, in the past in Butler City, if you go back a few years, the city clerk did a lot of the same jobs that this proposed city manager did. And, you know, I'm not in office, so it's not my place to talk about personnel issues at the city building. But, you know, there's always talk about restructuring that, you know, I think you could find a city manager. The downside of having a city manager is that you might have to make some changes within the city. And, you know, you can't incrementally add a $75,000-$80,000 expense to the city without making other changes. So that's something that you know, I'll get involved with hopefully in January. But the concept is good. How to do it is going to be tougher, I think, than what a lot of people think.
We've had to limit our interview time because we have a lot of candidates. We want to give everybody a chance to at least hear from them and hear what they feel their priorities would be in office. I always like to save a minute or two at the end of our chat to give our candidates a chance to kind of summarize if they so desire, or to make a case as to why voters should think about voting for them on election day. So this is candidate for Butler City Council, Jeff Smith.
Okay. I hope that the voters in Butler City will come out and support me on election day. I think my focus on the neighborhoods is critical to turning the city around. I think it's the only chance we have to turn the city around. I'm a challenger. I'm not an incumbent, but I have been part of Butler City government as the treasurer. And I would point out that, you know, during my 4 years as treasurer, the city revenues compared to the year prior to my taking office increased by nearly $1 million. And frankly, if the city wouldn't have had that extra $1 million during my tenure, we'd be underwater today. So I think with good management, fiscal management, I can provide that and hopefully make our neighborhoods more appealing and safer for all the residents.
He is Jeff Smith, a candidate for Butler City Council in the coming election. Jeff Smith, nice to have you here today. Good to talk to you.
Thanks, Dave. Good to see you.
We'll be continuing with more candidate chats today and tomorrow. We're not doing them all at once because, you know, don't want to overwhelm people, but we do have numerous candidates, which is great. So over a period of 3 days, we're going to listen to everybody who's running for either Butler City Council or for mayor in the city of Butler in the upcoming election, which is a week from today. Yeah, next Tuesday is Election Day. Why do we vote on Tuesday? I have no idea. It just seems like, I mean, everybody says, well, that's when we've always voted. Okay, that doesn't answer my question. Why? It seems rather arbitrary, doesn't it? You could pick almost any other day and say, that might be better. I don't know. We'll have to look into that, among other things. By the way, our next candidate coming up, and it'll be in just a couple of minutes here, we'll be chatting with Jamie Lee Gearing. She is a candidate for mayor in the city of Butler in the upcoming election. One of our sponsors on the program today is Jones Turkey Farm in Cabot. I don't know about you, but I love turkey. And turkey's good for you, too, by the way. It's one of the few things I can think of that's really good for you and that I love it. I could have turkey all the time. I really could. But especially, of course, at the holidays. Jones Turkey Farm on Jones Road in Cabot, right here in our own backyard. Their birds are something special. If you've had them in the past, then I don't have to convince you. But if you haven't, folks, at Jones Turkey Farm, they offer all-natural, free-roaming turkeys and chickens. Free-roaming. Their birds are handled with extreme care. They are specifically fed non-GMO grain, not genetically modified. Their birds are preservative-free, they're additive-free, and they are absolutely delicious. You can taste the difference. Now, whatever you prefer from Jones Turkey Farm, you can buy your turkey frozen. That's more convenient for a lot of people. Or you can get it fresh. You can get it fresh right before the big holiday meal. And you can order now. I'll give you a phone number here in just a second. Owner Dave Jones at Jones Turkey Farm stakes his reputation on his turkeys simply being the best in western Pennsylvania. Simple as that. They are delicious. Call. They're in Cabot, so the phone number is 724-352-2450. 352-2450 to place your order today. Or you can go online to learn more. Do it that way. JonesTurkeyFarm.com. Easy to remember. JonesTurkeyFarm.com. Jones Turkey Farm, Jones Road in Cabot, quite simply the best. I want to thank, and we don't have time to talk about it today, but we will in fairly short order here. I want to thank one of our listeners. One of the subjects that has come up on the program actually now several times over the last couple of weeks is the Ground Observer Corps, the Aircraft Warning Service, that was in effect for, and this is where it gets a little bit murky. There apparently were two separate systems. I want to thank listener Sarah. Sarah, thanks so much. She told me she had found some information on this and was going to share it with me. She dropped it off yesterday, I believe. Her older sister was one of the volunteer spotters, plane spotters, during World War II. And she would, although Sarah was a younger little girl, she would go with her sister to these, this one particular observation post, which was out off Route 38 North. And she has pretty good memories of it. So I thank you, Sarah, for dropping this information off. I have only just started to go through it. But one thing caught my eye. This, what was known as the Aircraft Warning Service, was developed during World War II. And it was taken out of service at the end of World War II. So there must have been another system that came into effect, because I can remember, I personally can remember as a little kid, stopping at one of these. I was with my dad. We were getting a Christmas tree. And it wasn't in the 1940s, I guarantee you that. That would have been impossible. So I'm going to have to do a little bit more digging. Thank you, Sarah, so kindly. I'll work on your info and see if I can get a little bit more info, too. It's a fascinating thing. It's amazing what comes up on the program sometimes. It really is. Okay, a quick break here. We have more to come. As I said, our next interview is with Jamie Lee Gearing, a candidate for mayor. And our final mayoral candidate will be tomorrow, by the way. We'll be talking tomorrow with Ben Smith. But Jamie Lee is up next, and we'll also talk today to council candidate James Kemple. And then still later on the program today, do you believe in angels? Our final guest, Laura Schroff, does. She'll be with us on the final portion of the program today. Coming up in just a moment, our interview with Jamie Lee Gearing.
For more than 130 years, the name Concordia has meant quality care. Today, Concordia Visiting Nurses has provided high-quality, skilled nursing and a variety of therapy services to people in and around our community. Concordia Visiting Nurses is here to foster your recovery right in your own home. If you're in need of home health care, choose Concordia Visiting Nurses. Call toll-free at 1-877-352-6200.
We continue, listeners. Good afternoon. Dave Malarkey here. We continue with our series of candidate chats, which we have done for many, many years here on WISR, and specifically on the It's Your Turn program. And leading up to the election in early November, November 7th, we are interviewing this year all of the candidates who are seeking either a seat on Butler City Council who are seeking to be the mayor of the city of Butler. And with us on this segment of the program, we have mayoral candidate Jamie Lee Gearing. Jamie Lee, nice to have you here today.
Always great to be back.
You, of course, have been running since the beginning of the year, the spring primary, close to the end now. I'm sure that many of our listeners know who you are. Some may not. So why don't you kind of introduce yourself to those who may not know you?
Wonderful. Yeah. So my name is Jamie Lee Gearing, and I am an accountant here in Butler. I own a accounting firm with my family. It's called Hudson Business Service, and I am the Democratic candidate for the mayoral seat in Butler City. And this is a adventure, I kind of want to call it. You know, this last year has really been an adventure of really digging into the city, learning so much about it, really meeting more and more of the community members. And it's been a lot of fun over these last few months.
Mm-hmm. Busy, but enjoyable.
It is busy, but I'm kind of used to that atmosphere around our office during tax season. We typically have about 1,300 people in and out of our doors, so I'm quite used to the challenge of, you know, keeping up with a large volume.
I like to give our candidates, instead of asking questions which might be considered leading, I like to give the candidates a chance to express their own views in terms of what you would consider to be top priorities if you are elected mayor of the city of Butler. When you would take over in January, what would you consider to be top priorities for mayor?
Well, I think that there's three major topics that we really need to talk about whenever it comes to the city of Butler. First and foremost, obviously, is our fiscal policies that we have in place, and really ensuring that our budget is being met and that we're continuing to grow the revenue streams that we have in the city. So that would be one of my top priorities. One of the other major aspects that we need to consider in the community is the safety levels that we have. I'd like to see the efficiency levels of our police department brought back up. Doing that through the institution of a desk sergeant situation. Our guys on our police force are some of the most dedicated and wonderful officers that we could really ask for in this city and in this community. Unfortunately, not having the desk sergeant position has given them a little bit of a difficult time with keeping up with efficiency rates. So I'd like to see us do that so that our community and our neighborhoods could see better patrol and have a better relationship with our officers. And then lastly, one of the other more pressing issues that we need to contend with right now is our bond rating. the, I know that some progress has been made with selling of the hotel. We have some new owners coming in, and I'm hoping we're going to see completion of that project. I know we already extended the deadline on the bridge loan till December 6th, but we need to make sure that we're staying on top of that. We really cannot afford at this point to continue seeing our bond rating decreasing. We've got a lot of aspects we need to purchase here in the next few years, large ladder truck, police cars for our guys, things of that nature, and that downgraded bond is really going to prevent us from being able to be effective and really securing some financial loans that are advantageous for us. So, you know, those three things I think are probably the top priorities, but there's a lot of stuff we got to get done around the city.
It's my understanding that once that hotel is completed, the Center City Hotel, that there'll be $2 million released by the state, which will then no longer be a liability on the part of the city?
Yeah. The bridge loan is currently held with PNC, and that bridge loan was put in place for the $2 million grant that was picked up for this project. So that money is sitting in lieu. We're just really looking for that completion date to be able to get it, and that's really what we're striving for right now.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned vehicles, and that's been an issue that's come up several times this year, the condition of the city's vehicle fleet, and not just police cruisers, but some of the fire apparatus, some of the vehicles, the trucks and equipment in the streets and parks department. A lot of money.
It is. It's going to be quite a bit of money. And, you know, whenever this problem first really was started to be presented, I went on over to the station and checked out the vehicles. I wanted to see for myself. I think it's important that, you know, we look and really see for ourselves what's going on. And there's springs sticking out of the seat, you know, from where the guys' guns will rub against the fabric. There are problems with, you know, driving through the city, stopping and starting all of the brick streets. You know, it's a lot of wear and tear on our vehicles. And so those definitely are a top priority, as well as ensuring that we have that ladder truck. The size of the buildings that we have in this community, the height requirements. We've already had a few major fires in the last year alone that I can recall where that ladder truck was a necessity for putting out the fires. Now, thankfully, we did have a meeting probably about 2.5 months ago with a leasing company that has some finance options that I think would probably work very well for not only what the city needs to replace the vehicles now, but also for a continual leasing program where we can have our vehicles replaced in a little more of a steady stream than what we're currently seeing, so that hopefully in, you know, a few more years, we're not sitting in another position of we need five vehicles right now.
You mentioned earlier that increasing revenue streams would be a priority for you. Can you elaborate on that a little bit, how that might be done? It's my understanding that the city is up against its limit in terms of taxes. A tax increase is not an option.
No, we really are not in a position of increasing taxes. And honestly, at this point, I think if we did increase taxes, we would see that drive out more community members than it would encourage to come in. So that's really not an angle that we need to look at. Instead, I'd like to see us looking at our business infrastructure, both the small business, but also the corporate aspects as well. Being a corporate draw is going to continue allowing others to come to our community with these bigger corporate stores, and that can hopefully offset some of the strain that our small business industry is feeling. You know, right now they carry the burden of the business privilege tax, and that's a pretty hefty burden for most of us small business owners to have at the end of the year. So I'd like to see us really working towards enticing those bigger corporate stores to come in, but also fleshing out more of our small business area. We'll see some revenue stream coming off of that. So rather than taxing more, I'd rather see us grow that base. One of the other aspects, too, then really comes down to our property values, which those have been steadily decreasing for years. And it has put a lot of people in very precarious situations where when they go to sell their home, they're not able to actually sell it for as much as it's even owed on it. So I'd like to see us really improving the property values that we have within the community. And we can do that through incentive programs. If we look to what LIRTA has done for the business community, I think we could pair off of that for something more residential. But we also need to really address all of the rental properties we have in the community that are deteriorating. We need to hold our landlords accountable. We need to make sure that these properties are being maintained, not just for the neighborhoods in which they are, but also for the residents that are living in there. There is no reason why if somebody is paying, you know, a pretty decent amount of rent, sometimes $600 to $900 for one place, there's an expectation of maintenance to be done on your property. So this really is for both sides of that, you know, those that are dwelling in the homes, but also those within the neighborhoods that these homes are affecting. I think through both of those things, we're going to see better revenue streams in relation to the property taxes and the business taxes that we're receiving. And that, to me, is how we're going to shore up the shortcomings that we have on that financial end.
In terms of helping to entice new business, are you in favor of sliding scale tax abatement plans, or do you have negative feelings about those?
Actually, I'm in line with them, but what I would like to see that really include are our generational businesses, meaning the ones that have been here for an extensive period of time. There's always such a large push for new business. But we really need to be retaining business as well. So when we're talking about those incentive programs, I'd like to see it where we have markers that after we have attained X amount of dollars in new business revenue, that actually works out to be a reduction then for that business privilege tax for those older businesses that have been here. I think that by doing that, we're actually going to be able to come to a more level area, a more level playing field then for all the businesses. So enticing those new businesses, but like you, you know, kind of brought up that sliding scale to ensure that we're retaining those older business structures.
Can the city offer support to renovation plans and proposals? I'm thinking specifically of the plan to renovate the Penn Theater as a live concert venue. Can the city offer support to those? There's a private group that's working to raise funds to do that. Can the city offer support in ways other than monetary?
I think that there's lots of ways that the city can work together. You know, we have a lot of great organizations in downtown that are always looking for ways to pair with others and do promotional aspects. So the Penn Theater really has already been supported for quite a length of time by the city through the Redevelopment Authority, who holds the loan on the Penn Theater. So there's already that natural relationship between the two of them. But yeah, I mean, I think that the city could do more in general of just encouraging the aspects of our city that we're trying to grow, because there are a lot of different organizations doing great things, but the Penn Theater, I mean, it holds a special place in all of our heart. We all obviously want to see that up and running and back to a functional aspect. And from the city's perspective, I think that we should be a bit more supportive in our, you know, just talking about it and getting the word out, sharing that information around.
What about the drug problem in this city? Some people have suggested that this is somehow a problem that's particularly severe in Butler. We realize now, I hope everyone does, that this is widespread. It's in all cities. It's now in urban, in rural areas. A year or so ago, state government got involved, and now the federal government recently is taking action too. So obviously this is a tremendously widespread problem. Is there anything that city government can do realistically to help battle the opioid crisis?
Well, honestly, I think that there's two really very simple things that we can do. One of them I've already touched on, and that's the desk sergeant position. It is a vital aspect to the efficiency of our police department. They can prioritize calls. They can ensure that calls are immediately being answered whenever there are, you know, drug activities going on. So bringing that desk sergeant position back, I think, is something for our police department that we can do to allow our guys to do their job, because that's what it comes down to. It's not me telling, you know, the police officers what it is that they should do. I just want them to be able to do what it is that they need to do. So, you know, providing that for them, I think, will allow that. But we also have the drug task force, which has been a very effective measure in the community. Now, for us as community members to be able to help this process, I would like to see us have a more actionable network in which we provide information to the Drug Task Force. We have a great community watch program that has been around for quite a while, but I would like to see us really, grow that program, make it more citywide, have more residents aware of the program, enrolled with the program, integrate it a little more with our police department so that we as community residents have some power back in our hands to really be part of the effective change. We can't solely rely on just our police department to, you know, make this incredible change. We as a community need to stand up. We need to take our streets back. We need to take our neighborhoods back, and we need to be able to provide that information in a manner that can turn into effective policing of the problem.
One final question before we summarize and wrap up. The possibility or the topic of a city manager came up in the recent televised political forums. Do you have a stance on that with regard to either the advisability and or the feasibility of a city manager?
I think that a city manager is probably one of the larger goals that we need to really wrap up at this point. It's been talked about for a number of years here in the city. We've heard about it on council. There's been, you know, conversation here and there about it. But what a city manager really is able to bring to the table are organizational skills on a full-time basis. City council, you know, this is not a 9-to-5 job for most of your council members. And when you do not have 9-to-5 operations and organization, we can fall into a little bit of a path of commonality. You know, we're just doing the same thing over and over again. So I think bringing that city manager in is going to help our organizational aspects, but they're also going to bring to the table something that's very, very important, and that's the grant writing capabilities. Many small towns of our size, they rely on grants to, you know, bring those extra monies in that we need. So having somebody on the payroll that is capable of doing those large grant writing applications for all departments, not just, you know, specific to the city building, but fire department, police department, streets, parks, the whole nine yards, bringing that position into the fold, I think will just help us see success a lot quicker and really give us some clear direction on where it is that we're heading as a community. And it will retain that continuity then as new council members are elected into position, you know, every 2 years. When you have that city manager, you've now retained some continuity as to that overall goal and direction of where we're going. So things, tend to go a little bit on a smoother path.
We've reached the end of our allotted time. I always give candidates a minute or so to summarize in case they've joined us midstream in our conversation here, or to in so many words say why you think voters, when they go to the polls, should consider voting for you for mayor. This is Jamie Lee Gearing, candidate for mayor of the city of Butler.
Well, thank you again, Dave, for having me on the show. I always appreciate getting to come in here. November 7th is a big deal, guys. We have a lot of things on the ballot that we need to all be aware of, and we all need to voice our opinion on. Obviously, I have my own name on this ballot, so it's very important to me, but this is a ballot that really is talking about our entire state. And the decisions that are made within the state are the ones that affect our lives on a day-to-day basis. So no matter who it is that you're voting for, please just get out to the polls on November 7th. Get your voices heard, and let's start making the effective changes we need to see not only the city, but also the state that we want for our children, our parents, ourselves. So get out there, and as they like to say, rock that vote.
Jamie Lee Gearing, a candidate for mayor in the city of Butler. Jamie Lee Gearing, thanks for being with us today.
Thank you very much, Dave.
Whether you're a competitive athlete or a weekend warrior, any injury that keeps you on the sidelines is not one worth having. The sports medicine specialist at Tri-Rivers Musculoskeletal Centers will help you get back into action so you can keep up your lifestyle. Our experts understand that the same treatments for competitive athletes can be used for those who just want to be able to stay active. They accept major insurance plans, including both Highmark and UPMC. Learn more about how you can get back on the field by visiting TriRiversMSK.com.
Still more to come. We have one more candidate chat today. And then don't forget, we'll be talking about Angels on Earth. Are there angels on Earth? Our final guest today, Laura Schroff, will talk about that. She's not at Butler, by the way. She's in New York, actually. She lives in right outside of New York City. We'll be chatting with her by telephone on the final segment of the program today. But coming up in just a moment, for today at least, our final candidate chat, and that will be with James Kemple. James Kemple is a candidate for Butler City Council. We will wrap up our candidate chats tomorrow. We have two more candidates to go. Ben Smith will be with us tomorrow. Ben Smith is a candidate for mayor in the city of Butler. And also tomorrow, Kenneth Bonus will chat with us. He's a candidate for Butler City Council. So that's the lineup. That'll wrap up our candidate chats. And we'll hear from James Kemple coming up here on WISR, the Tuesday edition, right after these words.
Hi, this is Howie Pinckney with Pinckney Capital Management in Portersville. Today, many people need help managing their investments. The investment options available today can be confusing. If you would like to talk to someone for help, why not call me for an appointment? Howie Pinckney at Pinckney Capital Management, 1284 Perry Highway, Portersville, Pennsylvania. My telephone number is 724-368-4224. Securities and advisory services offered through Commonwealth Financial Network. Member FINRA, SIPC, a registered investment advisor.
We continue, listeners, our candidate chats here on the It's Your Turn program on WISR. We have been talking throughout the week with all of the candidates who are either seeking to be the mayor of the city of Butler or seeking one of the seats that are up for election on city council. And our guest on this segment of the program is James Kemple. He is a candidate for Butler City Council. James Kemple, good to see you. Nice to have you with us today.
Thank you for having me.
I always start out by giving candidates a chance to tell the listeners who they are. Some people will know you, some people will not know you, and so they might appreciate just a little bit of background about who you are.
Well, my name is James Kemple, like you said. I'm a retired state corrections officer. I have my own private investigation company, and I'm a single parent raising my daughter. Some of the issues that I'm looking for to change in the city is a lot of has to do with the drug problem. This issue is huge and out of hand. I feel sorry for the people that are addicted. I feel sorry for the people that are losing loved ones over it. We really have to do something about that.
What do you think City Council can do about that? Cooperate with the Drug Task Force, for example? Or?
Oh, definitely cooperation is one of the most important things. One thing we need to do is beef up the police force. The fire department is doing an astronomical job of getting to them and saving so many people. We just need to make it more aware and work with the Drug Task Force, work with Rich Goldinger, work any way that we can as a unit. We need to get a good group of people in there that need to work together as a team, not as an individual.
You're talking about working together on council?
Yes.
You see a lack of cooperation now?
No. No, I don't. I mean, the meetings that I've had the fortune to make, it seems more personal issues instead of what's best for the city. Mm-hmm. And that's not what we need. We need a group of people. We need five people to make a team and to actually get things done in the city. And if you just get one issue and see it completely through, everybody's starting everything that I see that in the city and the council right now. They start quite a few programs, but nothing gets completed. So what good is it? That's just the political thing that they're doing. You know, look what I did. Well, what did you do by starting something and not finishing it? I mean, it's not what we need. We need to make this city great. And the best way to do that is to get a team of people that will work together. And I look at this aspect. If I get elected, I don't care who's on the board with me. I'm going to work with them, regardless of personal view, because it's not what's best for the city as a personal view. It's what best that we can do as a team.
The city of Butler has been in financial difficulty of one sort or another for quite a few years now. In some cases, it's been more serious than others, but it seems like every year they're up against it. Do you have any ideas as to how the city could increase its revenue that's coming into the city treasury?
Well, some of the ways they could. You have the best way to get the team together to get this taken care of. We seem to be stuttering about this, but we need to create revenue. The best way to create revenue is to bring business back in. One of the main things is that hurting the city is renters. And I understand why people rent. It just seems like we only have renters and welfare. It's just real high in the city. And then everybody that works, we're the ones paying the most taxes. And I don't know exactly how to get more money into the city, but it's something to look into. And the best way to do it is check the finances. Where's all the spending going? That's one of the main things. When the city gets their allotment of money that they're supposed to have, we got to figure out what the spending is.
What about repair and repavement of streets? Do you think that's being handled as well as can be, given the city's financial picture?
That's something I'd have to look into, because I know it seems like that the city spends where they have to spend more than for the road department. And the road department crew is trying to do different things with a very limited budget. I understand that. And I think on the spending part of it, we need to take a look at it. Financially, take a look at it and see what we can do with that. Does the city need streets replaced? Absolutely. It's just really tough. And then with the on-street parking, what are you going to do? You know what I mean? To fix a street, you have to find out where the people are going to park while they're being fixed.
What about the city's vehicle fleet? There's been some concern about that. The most expensive fire truck, the aerial truck, is out of service and has been for quite some time because the ladder, the extension ladder, has become twisted and needs major repairs. There was concern this summer about the condition of the city police cruisers, mm-hmm. also some of the trucks in the street department. Any thoughts on what to do about that? That's a lot of money, even to replace that or repair that aerial truck is a huge amount of money.
That's true, but some of the stuff can be taken care of with loans and grants. Loans, I don't think is a good idea, but checking into a grant system where you can maybe create some revenue or finances that way to help that stuff. But predominantly, the city police department, their cars, the fire department, they need that taken care of. That saves lives. That is the utmost importance. It should be taken care of immediately. And if that means not paving a street, I'm going to have to go with that. I think that's one more important.
You talked about trying to bring in new business to increase revenue. One of the schemes that are used to do that is a sliding scale tax abatement, where a new business would get partial relief on their taxes for a year and then a little less the next year and so on, on a 5-year scale or something like that. Do you have any thoughts on that? Are you in favor of a sliding scale tax abatement for new business?
Well, to tell you the truth, being in a business myself, that does help. That helps create a strong business, which will keep revenue coming in. I do agree with that, with the scale, with a 5-year scale. Maybe it's not as long as 5 years, maybe a 3-year scale. But, even go for the 4-year when it's only quarters, 0.25%, 50%, 75%, and 100%. I can see that. That would work. as much as possible.
What do you think about the downtown? Do you see that as the core of the city, that a healthy downtown means a healthy city and neighborhoods, residential neighborhoods surrounding the city get helped if the downtown is healthy?
Absolutely. I do believe that. It's like you go to some of the other cities and are known for, like, the way the Main Street looks. Go to Franklin. The Main Street, the way it looks is impeccable. That's what we need to do. Bring back the decorative lighting, the old bells for crossing. Something that makes the city stand out. The old bells was something that always stood out in this city. Because a lot of people, when I traveled, oh, yeah, you're from the city that has the bells. Yes, exactly. There's just different things that we can do. The shop owners who live on or who have buildings on Main Street have done a great job with keeping things clean and round and stuff like that. I like our city. I love it. I just want it better. And that's what I'm trying to do, is make it as best that I can. And I don't even know how much I can accomplish, but I'm going to give them 110%.
What about Crime Watch Group? There was a word earlier this year of a group, not necessarily Crime Watch as it existed in the past, where, you know, citizens went out in the evening with walkie-talkies, but more or less keep your eyes open type of thing, more concerned about the drug issue. Support them?
Yes, I do support Crime Watch. But if you don't have the police officers to respond, that's a problem. Or the fire department. You know, we need to turn around and absolutely start helping out. The district attorney can only do so much. If people will not testify in the court, what good is it? Their hands are tied. Eyewitnesses are the best things that we can have in the city. And that's what you become. Stand up for what you see is right. That's the way I look at it.
Our time begins to run short. Are there any other issues that you would see as important? You mentioned that you think your number one priority or number one concern is the drug problem.
Yeah, that is number one. Honestly, the city fire department and the city police department need as much help as we can give them. Because without them, they save lives. All of them. And I can't thank them enough for their jobs that they're doing in a thankless time. I mean, it's amazing. You need to have good people like that. And these people that put their heart into it, they deserve it.
We always wrap up our candidate chats. And by the way, if you've joined us midstream, and that happens, especially with folks listening to the radio in the car, we've been chatting with James Kempel. He is a candidate for Butler City Council in the upcoming November 7th election. We always wrap up our chats by giving each individual candidate a minute or so, or whatever time they want to take, just to kind of recap and, in so many words, tell people why they should consider voting for them. So, James Kempel, that's the question. Why should people consider voting for you on Election Day for Butler City Council, James Kempel?
Well, one of the main reasons is because I'm trying to do what's best for the city. Plain and simple. I don't care. There's no financial mean in this game. I'm trying to do what we need best to make our city great again, and that's what I want to do. I want it where we can walk down the street. Everybody always said hi. I want the old Butler City back. That's the way it should be. My kids should be able to run all over town, not worrying about where she's running into. And that's the main thing.
James Kempel, our guest. He's a candidate for Butler City Council in the upcoming November 7th election. James Kempel, nice to have you here today. Nice to talk
to you.
Thank you. One of our sponsors on the It's Your Turn program, Butler Motor Tours, online at butlerbus.com. And if you're looking for something for the young ones as a holiday treat, and I'm talking to parents, grandparents, aunts and uncles, how about taking the kids on the Santa Express on the Titusville Railroad. Maybe some of you have ridden on this railroad. It's not very far away. It's north of Franklin up in Venango County. A great family outing for all ages. And Butler Motor Tours is taking a one-day trip up there on December 2nd. December 2nd, all aboard the Santa Express, a two-and-a-half-hour railroad adventure filled with the sounds of Christmas. There'll be carolers, there'll be group sing-alongs, elves, and Santa Claus, of course. Kids will love this festive experience with the light activities on board and a chance to sit on Santa's knee. It includes a full lunch, a train ride on the Santa Express at the Titusville Railroad, a small gift from Santa for kids 12 and under, hot chocolate cookies. That's at the station after the train ride. More info, check online at butlerbus.com, their website. All their other trips are there, too, by the way, including the one-day trip to New York City for shopping and the one-day trip to the State Farm Show in early January. Butler Motor Tours, South Monroe Street in Butler, online at butlerbus.com, butlerbus.com. Our final guest, Laura Schroff, will be coming up on It's Your Turn this Tuesday in just a moment.
When is the best time to talk to your family about staying in touch during a disaster? When floodwaters reach your door? When wildfires are engulfing the edge of your neighborhood? Or an earthquake is destroying buildings? When a tornado is tearing through town? Or a hurricane strikes? Or is the best time, perhaps, today? During a disaster, you may not be able to stay in touch with your family or friends as easily as you think. And it's not always as simple as using your cell phone. That's why now is the time to take action. Go to ready.gov/communicate and make your emergency plan today. Don't wait. Communicate. Brought to you by FEMA and the Ad Council.
Listeners, do you believe in angels? We're going to talk about that on the next segment of the It's Your Turn program here on WISR. I'm Dave Malarkey. Our guest joining us by telephone is Laura Schroff, author of Angels on Earth. First of all, Laura, it's nice to meet you. It's terrific to talk with you for a while here today.
Well, thank you, Dave, and it is such a pleasure to actually speak with you too. Thank you for having me on your show.
Angels on Earth is actually sort of a sequel to an earlier book that you wrote. Fill us in on that, because some of our listeners will be familiar with your name. They read your earlier book.
Well, An Invisible Thread came out in 2011, and it's a true story about a young boy that I met back in 1986 who was a welfare child, and I met him on my street, 56th Street in New York City. When I passed, and he said, "Excuse me, lady, do you have any spare change? I'm hungry." I ended up taking him out to lunch, and we wound up meeting every Monday for the next 4 years and hundreds of times thereafter. So that was my first book. And then An Invisible Thread Christmas Story came out in 2015, and that's a chapter, the Christmas chapter in An Invisible Thread. But in An Invisible Thread, in the back of the book, I asked readers to share with me their own invisible thread stories. And I started receiving stories from readers of how someone came into their life and had a profound impact and changed their life.
Hmm. And so Angels on Earth is the result of the notes and the stories that people sent on to you. Is that the deal?
Yes. In fact, there's 29, I call them my chapter angels, and there's 29 stories in Angels on Earth. And some of the stories are how people have had a profound impact on them, and in other cases, how they had a profound impact on someone else. Mm. But what's the common thread is that if you're either the giver or the person who's receiving, at the end of the day, you both receive so much.
We're talking with Laura because Angels on Earth was originally published last year in hardcover. It's now in paperback. Is that right, Laura?
Yes, it is. It came out just a few weeks ago.
Mm-hmm. Well, tell us a little bit about this concept of an invisible thread. Just what exactly do you mean by that?
Well, an invisible thread actually is an ancient Chinese proverb, how an invisible thread connects those who are destined to meet, regardless of time, place, and circumstance. And it says that the thread may stretch or tangle, but it will never break. And what that really means is how people come into our lives, and perhaps at that moment you don't even know it, but you have been destined to meet that person. Mm-hmm. And how we all have these invisible thread connections.
And do you think that there might be something behind those meetings that seemingly occur totally by chance, totally randomly?
Well, I actually do believe that, and I believe that back, you know, even in 1986 when I met Maurice, I was working in advertising, and I was single. I was 35, and I pretty much worked most of the time. Mm-hmm. And one day I met Maurice, and before I knew it, I was not only changing his life, but even more importantly, he was changing my life. And I do believe that we were destined to meet. And I actually believe it was my mother who, unfortunately, she passed away at the very young age of only 47 when I was 25. But I believe she had a role in bringing us together because she knew that Maurice needed someone in his life, and she knew that I needed more in my life.
So this would have certainly strengthened your belief in angels, although I'm kind of hearing that you believed in them even before this, right?
Yes, I have believed in it. You know, I've believed in them most of my life. You know, when we think of angels, we think of these beautiful, wonderful spirits floating around in heaven with these gorgeous, fluffy, white wings. But also, there are people who are on Earth who are also angels on Earth. And those are people who are making a difference through really just either big acts of kindness or small acts of kindness.
So angels, both divine and otherwise, is one of the messages that people will take from your book, eh?
Well, I hope so, and I hope that it also will shed light on how we can all live happier and more purposeful lives through sharing acts of kindness. You know, we all can make a difference in the life of another person. And people say to me all the time how, you know, I don't have the time to really, you know, make a difference. And I say, you know, making a difference can be as simple as saying hello to someone in the elevator or smiling and saying hi to someone on a street or perhaps letting someone who's in the grocery line get ahead of you. And one of the very first stories in Angels on Earth is the chapter, The Hug. And it's about a young woman, Drew Sanchez, who was in a supermarket, and she saw a young mother with three small children. And she could tell by the meager things that they had in their basket, and the young boy was holding a calculator, that they were on a very tight budget. And it, you know, kind of brought Drew back to the days when she was a single mom and how she was struggling. But she was now in a point in her life where she could make a difference. And she went over to the woman and said, I don't want to really offend you, but I would like to pay for your groceries. And she wasn't sure how the woman would react, but the woman looked at her, started to cry, and said, thank you. And she told her she'd meet her by the registers, and when she didn't show up, she went over and she bought a gift card. And she went back and she found the woman in the produce department, and she said, you know what, you're probably still busy shopping, and I've got to get back to work, but I'd love to give you this gift card. And she handed it to the mother, and unbeknownst to her, the reaction that she got from the mother was that she gave her this big hug and started to cry and say thank you. And as Drew walked away, the two little boys said, wait, and she turned around, and they ran up to her and gave her this huge hug. Mm. And so, therefore, the name of the chapter is The Hug.
One of the things that clued you in, well, you noticed in their grocery cart that there weren't any luxury items in there. There was no sugary drinks or soda or cookies or any of that stuff, just basics. And then you saw one of the boys had a very small calculator in his hand, and you realized he was adding up the price of the things that Mom was picking out to make sure that they had enough money to pay for it when they got to the counter.
Right, and, you know, that moment not only changed Drew's life, but it also had an impact, I'm sure, on the people who the mother who received that gift card. And, you know, we can all do these types of things. You know, now that the holiday season is coming up, you know, there are so many people who are in need. And basically what I say and also what I believe is if we open up our eyes and hearts to our surroundings, sometimes the most beautiful moments are right in our path. We just need to acknowledge them and see them.
We need to take a quick break here. We've got more time to chat, however, with Laura. I must, though, mention in your introduction, not too many books I see where Seneca is quoted. Seneca, a great Roman philosopher, who once said, "Wherever there is a human being, there is an opportunity for kindness."
Isn't that a beautiful thought?
It is, yeah. And then when you think that it comes from back in ancient Roman time, where did you ever find that, by the way? Are you a Latin scholar, Laura Schroff?
No, not at all. No, just a little bit of research. You know, thank goodness for Google and the Internet.
We'll take a quick break. We have a few more minutes, listeners, to chat with Laura Schroff about angels on Earth, inspiring real-life stories. We'll pick up our conversation with her here on It's Your Turn on WISR right after these words. Is there someone in your family who you think might be starting to have trouble hearing? And can you gently suggest, you know, it could be your spouse or a mother, father, uncle, whatever. Could you suggest that maybe they ought to, you know, check into that? We would certainly suggest hearing aid service by Kelly for a number of reasons. Foremost is personalized one-on-one care from Kelly. She will take the time to make sure that everything is the way you want it, not only from a hearing standpoint, but from a comfort standpoint as well. Here's the deal, folks. Kelly is interested in helping you to hear. She's not interested in selling you the highest-priced hearing aid. In fact, you'll save thousands because there's no overhead when you're dealing with Kelly. And by the way, you heard that correctly, saving thousands. Hearing aid service by Kelly, personalized one-on-one service, and a complimentary consultation will get you started. Listen, people who have made the change or consulted with Kelly are really, really happy that they did. So what can it hurt? Give her a call. Call the hearing aid lady. Call hearing aid service by Kelly, 724-756-4327, 724-756-4327.
The Butler County Republican Party stands united in our support of our candidate, Ben Smith, for mayor of Butler, who won the vote of our citizens in the primary election. I'm Larry Thompson, and I share our party's enthusiasm for Ben Smith, who will bring a strong financial management background, strategic planning, and a focused commitment to the resurgence of our city's vitality and prosperity to the mayor's office. He will work diligently in cooperation with council and all community members to effectively position Butler as a county seat to be a business hub for Butler County. Please vote for Ben Smith for mayor on Election Day.
Paid for by the Republican Committee.
Welcome back. We chat on this segment of It's Your Turn here on WISR. By the way, my name is Dave Malarkey. We chat with Laura Schroff, author of Angels on Earth, now in paperback. It's a sequel of sorts to the New York Times and international bestseller called Invisible Thread, which was published several years ago. And just in case you're joining us a little bit late, the stories that are shared in this book, Laura, they're all true, for goodness sakes. These were all passed on to you by people who had read your earlier book and wanted to share their thoughts.
Yes. In fact, the very first story that I received was only a month after An Invisible Thread came out, and it was a man by the name of Angel Perez, and actually his chapter in the book is The Sunburn, and he wrote me this incredible letter telling me how when he was in high school, he came across a guidance counselor who took a real interest in him, and how this guidance counselor really changed his life. And, you know, Angel Perez came from Puerto Rico. He was very poor. He lived in the South Bronx during the time when the South Bronx was really having a lot of problems. And he was probably destined for that kind of life. And yet this guidance counselor noticed that he had such incredible potential. And she took him under her wing. And Today, Angel works for Trinity College, and he's got a doctorate degree. So sometimes what happens, too, is when we meet these people, we don't know in that moment that it's going to have this incredible ripple effect, and how it, you know, in the case of Maurice and our friendship, you know, we never knew when we first met how one day it would have such an impact and how it would ultimately change the life of his children, too. So kindness can ripple outward, and there's a chapter in Angels on Earth Again, The Helper's High, and that's Dr. Dale Atkins, and she's an expert. She actually has studied kindness, and what she says is that kindness is contagious, and the more that we incorporate kindness into our daily activities, it makes you feel good, and the more you do it, the more you want to do it over and over and over again.
Obviously, in your case, with Maurice, you were able to maintain contact with him for a long, long time. Are some of the stories in your book, Angels on Earth, are they just very brief encounters or even perhaps a one-time encounter?
Well, the one-time encounter certainly was the hug.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, and there's another story in the book, which is the bookstore. And that was a one-time encounter, too. And that was Jim Kettlewell. And, you know, Jim Kettlewell's story is very, very sweet. And unfortunately, he passed away in August, so he didn't have the opportunity to actually see the book come out. But his story is how he talks about how when he was in a bookstore, and what was so peculiar is he was sitting down finishing An Invisible Thread when he overheard a young man talking on the phone. And this man, Rick, was frantically on the telephone because his paycheck was being held back for certain reasons, and he was taking care of his daughter lived with him, his young daughter, and he was frantically looking for a place to sleep because he had just moved to this area. And Jim noticed that he was having a hard time, and when he got off the phone, Jim started to talk to Rick and said, "You know what? I really want to make a difference. I want to help you today." And they went to an ATM machine, and Jim Kettlewell took out $300 and gave it to this man and said, "You can use this much more than I can." And the man asked for his address so he could send him the money back. And Jim said, "No, I'd like you to keep it, and someday when you're in a better situation, you can just pay it forward."
Hmm.
So that was just a very brief encounter.
Do you have any stories, or have you heard from young people who have been an angel to someone? Is it always adults?
No, it's not always adults. In fact, there's a young girl in Angels on Earth, and her name is Avital Sutton. And what's really interesting is when she was 11 years old, she was working on her bat mitzvah project, and she actually used an invisible thread and the story as part of her bat mitzvah project. And she contacted me because she had some questions. And I said to her, "Why don't we just set up some time to talk?" And she was telling me about her project, and I said, "Wow, this seems like a really big deal." And she said, "Well, it is." And I said, "Would you like me to come to your school?" And she said that she promised her mom she wouldn't ask because she was stepping over the line, but because I offered, I went to her school and she presented the project. And then a couple of months later, she and her mom were shopping, and they came out of the supermarket area, the parking lot, and she saw a young man holding a sign, and she said, "Mom, we have to stop. We have to stop and help this man. We have to go back and get the things that he needs. He needs things for his babies." And so the mother agreed, and they went back to the store and purchased all the things that were on this list that he was holding up. And they went back, and she gave the man everything, and to her surprise, the mother with some small children came out from behind a tree, and they couldn't believe that they actually had stopped and went back and were giving them things for their children.
Mm.
He wasn't looking for alcohol or anything like that. He was looking for diapers and things that he needed for his children. You know, unfortunately, too, sometimes, and I talk about this in Angels on Earth, sometimes it's the least people who have the least amount that are willing to give the most. And for Avital Sutton, she just noticed that this man needed help, and her family was in a position where they could help out.
You had one story in your book, the title is The Garden, which kind of struck home to me. And some these stories are going to, different ones are going to strike home, I think, to different people. This was about, I don't know whether you remember this off the top of your head, Laura, Monique Cano, who was she wanted to be the cranky old neighborhood lady. kids were kind of cutting through her yard on their bicycle on their way to school, and she put up a fence, and she didn't want anybody's help from anything. The reason it struck home for me is I had a similar situation when I was, I don't know, seventh grade, something like that. You get to that age, and we walked past a very old lady's house on the way to school every day. And, you know, we used to talk about her and kind of make fun of her. We never engaged her, but I always felt bad about that later in life. I said, what the heck was I thinking? Well, I was in seventh grade, you know. I was stupid. So the garden struck home to me because there was one lad who a couple of times stopped and wanted to help her digging her garden, and she kept saying no, no, no. And finally, one day she relented and said, well, yeah, go ahead. And that was the opening, right? That led to the rest of the story.
Yeah, and it was such a, I mean, again, what I love about Angels on Earth, stories are not my stories. These are stories that people have submitted to me. And they're all unique and they're all very special. But what's so interesting about Monique is she talks about how she was like this crotchety old lady, and she was really actually very, very young. And this 9-year-old boy, James, would stop and ask if he could help her. And she kept saying no, and then one day she finally gave in. And before she knew it, James would come over every day, and they would plant in the garden, and she and James would hang out with Monique. And what Monique really realized was this young boy needed someone else, needed a friend in his life, and she took him under her wing. So again, it's just this very sweet story.
One more quick one. There are 30 powerful dramatic stories in Laura's book, Angels on Earth, but I have to mention this one, an Angel on Earth story about taking a chance, because it illustrates how sometimes you have to go out on a limb a little bit. This is the one where the football coach, it was a high school football coach, who ran into a young lad, it was a freshman, I think, who was getting into trouble quite a bit. The coach ran into him in the hallway at school one time, asked him if he'd ever played football. The kid said no, he hadn't, and then the coach handed him a $10 bill and said, here, go buy yourself a bag of drugs or spend it on a physical and come out for football. The kid got the physical, made the football team, and years later, he was playing in the National Football League. What a great story that is, Laura.
I know. Is that there's so many. It's a great story. And what I hear from readers, and what really kind of warms my heart, is readers will tell me that they'll keep the book by their bed table, and before they go to sleep, they'll read a chapter, because one chapter is one story. So it's, you know, there's 29 of them, but and 30 including my stories, which is the rainbow, which is the final chapter, and then, of course, the introduction, and how the rainbow story for me is how I believe that my mother, again, how I mentioned, played, I think, a profound impact in my life when she helped bring Maurice into my life, but how I believe that my mother, so many years later, you know, is still in my life, but she kind of orchestrates everything from heaven. In fact, I can picture her with a clipboard, and she kind of just checks off all the things she needs to do for the day. Mm. But I love the fact that readers will read a chapter before they go to sleep, because they tell me it's such a nice way to kind of end a day that sometimes can be quite stressful.
You got a nice testimonial from the star of the TV show Touched by an Angel.
I know.
Yeah.
Roma Downey, that was really quite beautiful. And, you know, she basically is just saying how we can all be an angel to someone.
Roma said, this shining book gives us story after story, reminding us that God is always near. Nice, nice. Folks, the title is Angels on Earth, now in paperback. Inspiring real-life stories of fate, of friendship, and the power of kindness by Laura Schroff, with whom it's been our pleasure to chat for the past few minutes here on the It's Your Turn program, visiting with us by telephone from New York. Laura, nice to meet you. Thanks for telling us about your book.
Thank you, Dave. Thank you so much, and have a beautiful day, and have a lovely holiday.
Oh, thanks very much. Same to you.
All right. Bye-bye. Take care. Bye-bye.
Midday lottery numbers for you today. The pick two is 3131. The pick three, 526. Pick four, 4278. The pick five, 79389. The wild ball for each of those is 7. The treasure hunt is 4, 6, 13, 19, and 28. Estimated jackpot for tomorrow's treasure hunt is $80,000.